Welcome to the Modernizing Your Practice podcast.
I'm Matt Towers, product lead for assurance services for CPA.com. CPA.com is the technology subsidiary of the AICPA and is tasked with helping bring the profession forward into the digital age through relevant learning opportunities and technology solutions.
Today, we'll be discussing the importance of building a firm quality wellness plan. In this discussion, we will not only hit on key reasons why this is critical for firm success, but also what a solid plan might include and what firms can do to begin creating and executing against a plan today. Joining me in the discussion are three special guests. First, we have Richard Hill, Managing Director at Mitchell, Emmert & Hill, CPA firm located in Knoxville, Tennessee. Richard has participated as a peer reviewer for many years and brings insight into the challenges and approaches that small firms take in quality assurance around a test and assurance engagements. Glad to have you on the call today, Richard.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. We also have Christy Aluzzi, Senior Technical Manager and Staff Liaison to the AICPA Technical Issues Committee on the line. In her role, Christy regularly interacts with small firms and understands the challenges they face and often brings their voice into AICPA discussions. Thanks for joining, Christy.
No problem. Happy to be here.
All right. And lastly, we're joined by Mike Glynn, Senior Manager with the Audit and Attest Standards Team at the AICPA. Mike works with the Auditing Standards Board and the Accounting and Review Services in developing and issuing standards for audits, attestation, review, compilation, and financial statement preparation engagements. Welcome, Mike.
Matt, thanks so much for having me. It's my pleasure.
Great. I'm looking forward to tackling this subject with all three of you. So first, I want to kick off asking a question. Why is it important to talk about having a wellness plan for firm quality around test and assurance services? I know we've looked at data from peer reviews, and that kind of points to some trends. So I'm wondering, what exactly have we looked at, and what sort of things have we learned?
Well, Matt, I'll take that. This is Richard. I think I have a fairly comprehensive view of the challenges of smaller firms in complying with professional standards. As a firm of fewer than 10 professionals, I operate in that small firm environment. I've been very active in the peer review program of the American Institute of CPAs, performing my first peer review in 1992. And I perform about 25 reviews a year. 80% or so of those are for firms who do not perform audits. So they do preparation, compilation, review, some occasional attestation engagements. And a lot of these firms that I work with are smaller. They have anywhere from one to maybe three partners or three professionals in the firm. So they're fairly small. I'm a former member of the AICPA Peer Review Board. I'm a current member of its Oversight Task Force. And in that role, I visit with other administering entities in other states throughout the country to look at their processes and their reviews and how they handle the program. When I'm not doing that, I serve as the chair of the Tennessee Society of CPAs Peer Review Committee, and I sit on the committees within Tennessee that review and accept the report. So I get to see a lot in peer review, and that really helps provide me a pretty good perspective on the challenges those firms face. I don't have recent information, but as of a few years ago, there were about 25,000 firms enrolled in peer review, and a remarkable 85% of those have fewer than 10 professionals in them, and something like 70% have fewer than 5 professionals. So you can see the peer review program is largely made up of these smaller firms, 10 or fewer professionals, and admittedly, the larger 10 or 20 firms probably have as many hours of accounting and auditing work as the smaller firms do, but just from a number of firms' perspective, again, 85% of the firms have fewer than 10 professionals that are enrolled in peer review. One to three person shop just doesn't really have the resources that the larger firms have. They don't have a room of technical staff that research the standards and develop templates and tell them how to implement the standards. This is a job those professionals have to do. And unfortunately for many of them, they do that when they're not opening the mail, going to the bank, trying to fix a leaky roof, taking the trash out and trying to replace, you know, a receptionist that quits abruptly. So they constantly juggle priorities, as we all do, but I think there's just a different pressure in the small firm environment. really complying with the standards should be pretty easy. The standards are out there, they're available, and most of these firms have third-party practice aids. And those aids cut the crust off our sandwiches and cut them in half and make them easily digestible. There are example reports, example letters, their checklists, all to help a firm comply with the standards. So why is it that these small firms are still struggling, and why are all firms struggling to a degree to comply with the standards on compilation, preparation, and review? I'm not trying to excuse small firms in any way or large firms. I'm not making excuses for anybody. If we accept an engagement as a professional, we've got a duty to do it right. Doesn't matter what the challenges is. If we accept an engagement, we have to follow the standards, but there's some element that's missing. Now, admittedly, peer review's gotten a lot tougher in the last few years as we try to meet the needs of the users and keep a self-review program intact. Much of this is focused on audits. You've heard of enhanced audit quality initiative and must select engagements that involve the public interest and all that, but preparation, compilation, and review work is important too. And peer review, as a reminder, peer review doesn't go beyond the standards in any of these engagements. We're just trying to get firms to follow the standards. So I've observed a lot of firms struggling with three issues primarily. It's based on my experience. That's in reporting, in getting a proper engagement letter, and in documenting review procedures, the analytical procedures and the inquiries that are required on a review. And data gathered by the AICPA peer review program affirms this same information. Nearly half of all the matters that are developed in a peer review surround these three areas. And the thing that's surprising me, Matt, is that there have been no new standards issues. There haven't been new substantive changes in the statements on standards for accounting and review services. So it's not like there are new standards out there and firms are struggling to keep up with all these changes. The standards are largely unchanged for the last 3 or 4 years. And so the firms should be familiar with this, and yet they're not. I don't think any of this is a lack of interest on the firm's part. Never have I called a firm to review my comments on a peer review and gotten them to argue with me or to be anything other than upset that they didn't follow the standards. So there's something else out there. Maybe they just don't take these engagements as a primary service they're going to offer. Perhaps they are engaged to do a tax return for an organization, and then management says, well, while you're here, we need something to give to the bank, so will you also prepare a set of financial statements? So maybe that's part of it, too, is that the firms just aren't taking these engagements as seriously as they should have. One thing to know on preparation engagements, those aren't usually looked at in peer review. So peer review can do a lot to help a firm get better on these, but if we don't look at preparation engagements, those could still be being done incorrectly and that not surfacing. So I think the firms need some help. The last comment I would make would be that peer review is trying to respond to that a couple of different ways. One, years ago, if a firm missed something on an engagement, they would just simply tell us that they'll do better in the future. We would accept that. We'd move on. But now peer review wants to know how a firm will remediate that nonconforming engagement in accordance with the standards. And a lot of times, depending on the severity of the issues, they will ask that the firm allow somebody to look at a subsequent engagement just to make certain that they've corrected the issue. So while that's a little tough love philosophy, I think it's helpful because it's making sure the firms get it right. When those kind of corrective actions are put in, a firm actually gets better. So that's good. The other thing they're doing is this semi-annual newsletter that's just recently come out that peer reviewers will send out to their peer review clients. Those are highlighting issues that peer review is seeing, and I think that's things that peer review can do to help this need, but certainly the need's there. I've seen it firsthand in my practice as we make sure we try to follow all the standards. I've seen it as a peer reviewer. I've seen it as a committee member. And the data from the AICPA just reinforces this. These are real issues that these smaller firms, probably firms of all sizes, but primarily smaller firms, are struggling to comply with.
Richard, I'll add a couple thoughts because as you were talking about some of the reasons this might happen, something I've actually encountered in some of my research, and just to give a bit of background, with my role at CPA.com, I speak regularly with firms around challenges in this area to just better understand what are some of the problems that maybe haven't been solved through technology. And something that I've also heard is that it can be challenging to shift gears between service levels. And if somebody is doing auditing, for instance, to then transition that mindset down to a review level or compilation level or really take any levels of service, and it can be challenging. And I think there's also a certain element of how confidently does everybody understand where the lines are between each of these service levels, prep, comp, review, and so forth. So I think those things are probably contributing factors as well.
I agree 100%. I think auditing, since our days in college, auditing's always been presented to us as a higher risk engagement. You've really got to have skepticism and got to be ready to go when it's audit time. And I think you're right. A lot of firms probably lower their guard when it's only a compilation or only a preparation or only a review. And that's just the wrong mindset to take into these type engagements. I agree with you 100%.
And Matt and Richard, this is Mike. Just to add on there, Richard, you mentioned a bunch of different practice aids and other things that are available for practitioners. The baseline for everything we do has to be the compliance of standards, and then everything, the guides and other things that we'll talk about later on in this podcast kind of build off those standards. Without a good knowledge of the standards, the foundation crumbles and the whole building comes down. So there's no substitute for that knowledge and having that, taking the time to go in and look at the standards and make sure you understand them. Both the ASB and the ARSC, of course, the ARSC being the group that issues stands for reviews, compilations, and financial and preparation engagements, both went through a very painstaking process of clarifying the standards. That was meant to make them easier to read and to understand and implement, not for folks who write other articles and books, but for professionals who are out in the field doing these things, every day. So, and if you have that understanding in both like the audit standards, if you do audits, and the review, all these other things about fences and where one type of engagement stops and starts, that really becomes very, very clear when you understand like the level of assurance obtained in audit. And then when you look at the review standards, you see that how much less that is. I mean, you really get a full feeling for what you are responsible to accomplish in the engagement. So a wellness plan, like anything else we do, you have to have that solid foundation of a good understanding of the actual standards before we build off on anything else.
Yeah, I think we're referring to the term firm quality wellness plan deliberately here. It's intended to be proactive. It's intended to be something that firms can do to prepare themselves to be successful, really even before the very first thing happens in an engagement. It's all about that preparedness. So I guess I'd like to see what else we might consider as part of a solid plan for firm quality.
I'll jump in here. This is Christy. I work with the Technical Issues Committee, and for those that aren't familiar, the Technical Issues Committee is comprised of partners at PCPS, or Private Company Practice Section firms, from all over the country. And they deal primarily with private company issues. They are smaller, firms. And so I get some good perspective on what they're struggling with. And I would say one of the major issues, I think, is just knowing the resources that are out there and how to access them, because I think I find from even at like conferences that I speak at, sometimes things that I mention, firms are not even familiar that those tools are out there. And in a lot of cases, these tools are either free or low cost, options for smaller firms to take advantage of. And just to name a few, and I know that Richard and Mike probably have others that they're going to talk about as well. But, as Mike talked about the standards and the fact that they clarified those and tried to make them easier for practitioners to implement, those those standards are available on the AICPA website for free, and the SARs include implementation guidance. Those are the A sections, you know, towards the back of the standards that really do walk through examples and illustrations and sort of how-to guidance. You know, I know Mike's going to talk about the Competent Review Guide, which is another great low-cost resource. Richard mentioned peer review. I think a lot of firms don't realize that they can leverage their peer reviewer. You know, if you're having questions, if a firm is struggling with something, if you need a tool or how to handle a client, you know, situation, whether it be firm quality management or adoption of the standards and how to apply them, I think utilizing your peer reviewer is also just a great, you know, resource. I also worked years ago on the AICPA's technical hotline. A lot of practitioners don't realize that any AICPA member has access to that hotline. Those are live people that will answer the phone when you call that are very technical, and you can ask any question in the A&A space. So if you have a question about a compilation, review engagement, an audit, a FASB, you know, an accounting standards question, you can call the hotline and get a live person and a verbal response. The AICPA also, a few years ago, in response to helping smaller firms that don't have national offices, they launched the Center for Plain English Accounting. That's another great resource. They put out trainings and reports and illustrations of the standards. They also answer technical questions in writing, which I know a lot of our members were sort of asking for years, and we're now able to do that. It's a great smaller firm resource, again, that a lot of people just don't know about. PCPS itself, the private company practice section, is available at a very low cost for firms to join who deal mainly in the private company space. And they also have a lot of toolkits and resources available on their website for the smaller firms. So I do think in some cases, it's just the firms knowing what tools are out there, knowing what's going to work for them, and perhaps even having a point person at the firm that is their expert, is their quality, you know, management person that's maybe gathering these resources and disseminating information. I think sometimes too, it can be a bit daunting for a small firm. You know, I look at a standard like RevRec under 606, and you're talking about hundreds of pages of a standard. And I think for smaller firms, some of this can be really overwhelming. So being able to digest, say, 10-page snippets or reports of some of the key issues, the peer review, you know, findings, I think for the smaller firms is really beneficial.
Christy, this is Mike. We really are doing ourselves a disservice if we don't take advantage of a lot of those resources, including, you know, speaking to our peer reviewers, reaching out to other folks at other firms that are either within our network or whatever the case may be, you know, availing ourselves of different alerts that are available and articles that are on, you know, in the Journal of Accountancy or other publications, things that all great, great stuff. But that's all non-authoritative stuff that we go into to kind of, well, I still have this question when I look at the authoritative literature. Let me go out and pick someone else's brain and see, you know, how to get there. And that includes all that stuff that those practices are developed by third parties out there. Those aren't authoritative either. So we still have our responsibility always to make sure that, you know, job one and job two are both, you know, make sure we understand the authoritative literature, the standards themselves, and the authoritative guide. And then everything else builds off of that.
Well, that's great, Mike. I was thinking about resources in a way that kind of talks about, look, with respect to what you just mentioned and adherence to the standards, I think one of the challenges that that we want to talk about or can get into as it relates to how to remedy or what resources can be helpful. One of the challenges is being able to kind of get some muscle memory, for lack of a better term, around how to approach this. And in my role, I am very strictly looking at the impact of technology on process. And this is an interesting area because one of the products that I oversee is called OnPoint PCR, and the PCR part refers to prep, comp, and review. And in talking to dozens of firms over the last year plus about prep, comp, and review services, it's increasingly apparent to me how much firms rely on their technology in these areas. And unfortunately, what I've seen is a lot of firms apply what I would say is maybe outdated approaches to leveraging technology. They're kind of doing things that they're comfortable with and maybe not fully looking at the way technology can have an impact. So when I mentioned muscle memory, I think the main thing that is proactive about this is that when a firm's looking at technology, looking at what can they do on the front end to configure templates and standardization into the way they approach these different service lines. And that way, when the time comes, there is something already sort of built into their process. It doesn't replace the need for the firm to have the ultimate responsibility to make sure everything adheres to quality and the standards. But what it does do is it incorporates into the process the things that the firm needs to consider and should be doing as part of how they work. All of this research really applied towards the way OnPoint PCR was built, for instance. So things like being able to say, we know, I think, Richard, you mentioned early in the conversation that one of the things that you've seen regularly, and I think you mentioned top three most common things, you mentioned engagement letters, and you might have said rep letters too, but letters in general and language and so forth. And this is the kind of area where we saw that and we said, well, what can we do to help and how can technology help? And the product essentially was built in a way that says, well, when somebody goes through their methodology, let's connect that methodology to the actual language that ends up flowing into the letters. And it helps automate some of the steps, even though the firm obviously has a responsibility to reviewing and making sure everything does it here. Technology is one of these areas that firms can get lost in it. And if you take a process that just really isn't very efficient in the first place and try to apply technology towards it, it's really not going to fix the problem. It probably magnifies it. I think a lot of firms understand that to be true. So there's an approach towards technology that I think is really important that firms build into this plan.
Matt, I'll jump in. I think something like that's important because peer review comes in after the fact. And so there's only so much we can do. It reminds me of the joke I heard years ago describing an audit, that an audit comes in after the war's over and stabs all the wounded people. And so to that end, peer review comes in after the engagement's already out the door. And so that's not really a tool that's going to help identify an issue before it happens. It comes in after the fact and points that out to the firm. Then they have to respond to an engagement that's already been issued. So I think something that gets out in front of that type issue that the firms are dealing with is more helpful, more a fix in real time than peer review is.
I couldn't agree more. I think the role of peer review is obviously important to kind of keep a consistency across the profession in terms of the approach. And the comments you made earlier, Richard, around the improvement in the audit quality and so forth, I think many firms don't realize, and this was mentioned a little bit, but standards haven't really changed significantly in quite a while. And it's simply the rigor in terms of how do we approach peer review and making sure that there's appropriate rigor and accountability in the process. That's really what's changed, and it's a very good thing for the profession. I think it was a Gallup poll from 2018 that I recall seeing talking about the most trusted professions, and the profession of accounting was, I believe, top five or six in terms of most trusted. And one of the reasons is this self-regulation that the accounting profession does, which is really unique to the profession. And so peer review in that regard is very helpful.
We are, to my knowledge, the only profession that invites this level of self-critique. And the other professions, I think, sometimes think we're crazy for it, but we want to make sure the work we're doing is at the highest level. And this helps that. When peer review first started, it's always been educational and remedial, but it was more best practices and coach people and all that. And now it's taken on more of a stronger tone, I guess I'll say, But I think we had to do that in order to keep self-regulation one and to keep our position on that list. I've actually seen lists where accountants are second only to doctors in trustworthiness. And so we didn't get there easily. And so I think all this is important for us to keep the confidence of the community in the work that we do.
So excellent. Well, let's try to wrap things up with kind of one final ask, which is, what if you had to just pick maybe one actionable step that a firm can take today that can help get them started in building out this proactive firm quality wellness plan, what would that be? Mike, I'm going to throw this one to you to get us started.
Okay, well, Matt, thank you very much. We do need to have, at our firms, have a process in place where the firm as a whole has, a way of understanding and of making sure that engagements are performed in accordance to the standards. If we're at a firm with multiple partners, that would be having, one partner be, maybe be in charge of quality control with respect to adherence to standards and then set a methodology for the firm to follow. We're at a smaller firm that there's only maybe one or two of us performing these engagements. Well, then, our job might be a little bit more difficult, but we have to make sure we have, some way of ensuring that when we sign those reports that said we performed our engagement in accordance with the professional standards, that we know that we have in fact done that, not kind of relied on something else to ensure that for us.
Thanks, Mike. I'm going to chime in with mine very briefly, which I just touched upon a few minutes ago. I would say if you have not evaluated your technology stack around these services in some time, and I think even if you've done so as recently as a couple of years ago, everyone's probably aware of the fact that technology is moving very rapidly. So it's definitely worth looking at that, evaluating it, seeing are there places where your technology could be holding you back. So I just recommend everybody do that evaluation. Take a look and see where are your opportunities to potentially improve, in particular improving that ability to be proactively set up for success around the quality of your work.
Yeah, Matt, and I think another thing firms can do, and I think I mentioned this earlier, but assign someone from your firm to be that champion, and maybe that person who is going to determine, what your technology is, what tools you plan on utilizing to be able to carry forward the standards. As Mike mentioned, you got to make sure you're following the standards, and you have to read the standards, but then there are also some tools and resources to help you out, along the way. So I think, first and foremost, firms need to decide who is responsible, at the firm for doing that, for taking that stock and helping decide which technologies they're going to use and which tools they're going to, take advantage of at their firm.
Great. Thanks, Christy. Richard, take us home. What do you got for us?
Well, I'm going to have two, but I'm piggybacking off comments that have already been made. To Christy's point, I would encourage firms to engage their peer reviewers. We're limited. We can't be part of your system of quality control, but it's not unusual for me to get a phone call. I actually solicit these from my peer review clients. They'll call up and say, hey, do I remember there was a change in this? Or have you run into this situation? Where can I go? I don't necessarily answer their question as much as I point them in the right direction. And then my closing comment, I started in accounting in 1981. As a young auditor, and I remember having 13 column green bar paper and adding rows of numbers across and adding them down and then being frustrated when there was a difference in there. I mean, logically there shouldn't be, but inevitably there was a math error somewhere in this massive 13 column document. And today we use Excel. And so anybody younger than about 50 probably would be shocked to see a spreadsheet with a bunch of numbers in it. That are manual that you have to add on a calculator. But Excel has automated that process, and so that's using technology very smartly. Likewise, in this case, the application would be to use technology where you can. It's not a substitute, I think, as Mike had said, for reading the standards, understanding the standards, applying the standards, but it's a good, helpful tool, I'll say, to help make sure that you know what's in the standards. And to the degree you can use technology, I think that's great. We've been a paperless firm for maybe 15 years here. But I know a lot of firms I work with are not yet even paperless. They've still got paper files. So they've got a longer way to go. But to everyone out there, no matter how far you are down the road of using technology, push yourself to go just a little bit further, because it truly will then let you focus on what's really important, and that's thinking about the standards and the best way to apply that. That's all I have.
Thanks, Richard. I might even add that if there are firms that are still paper intensive, in some ways it might even be easier for them to leapfrog a bunch of the progressive steps and go right to cloud services and some of the things that are available today.
Yep. Yeah, I agree 100%.
Great. So, Richard, Christy, Mike, thank you all so much for joining in this discussion. I think this is very insightful and certainly should be applicable for many of the listening firms out here today.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Thanks, Maya.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So, we'll close out here just to say thanks again to everybody. I'm Matt Towers of CPA.com. And I want to just express my appreciation for you listening in. Really hope you enjoyed the discussion. So until next time, I encourage you check out CPA.com for more information, help you and your firm win in the digital age. Take care.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of CPA.com. It is provided with the understanding that CPA.com is not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. CPA.com makes no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content and application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.